John, see if you can get in fellowship and put all that aside. Let's pull out your doctrine of conspiracy here. And we're going to review this because this is exactly what's going on here. It's totally germane to this situation that Jesus is facing. There's been a conspiracy against him for some time. I mean, it's not as though this is new, but again, we saw with that imperfect verb there in verse 12, they'd been seeking to seize him, but it's really getting ratcheted up now. I mean, this goes back again to sometime in 30 AD they were seeking to seize him. They wanted to kill him back then. This is 2.5 years later. Well, the desire to kill him is only intensifying. And so, therefore, they got to figure out a way to do it. Well, this is their way. And the conspiracy is the way they operate because, like career criminals and all of that, the mafia and that, they don't tend to operate, you know, where you can see them. That's the goal, is to remain hidden. The more you can remain hidden and still be in plain sight, the better off you are if you're a criminal. And certainly in terms of this type of thing where you're plotting murder. One here, introduction. The belief exists that the human race has an inherent predisposition to believe in conspiracies based on its evolutionary past. Okay, first thing you ought to think when you read this first point is, number one, we don't have an evolutionary past, and so therefore this belief is stupid. And that's what I'm trying to point out with point one, that it's dumb to believe that the human race has some inherent predisposition to conspiracies. I don't see anything in human nature. I mean, I never grew up at 5 or 6 or 7 or 10 or 12 or 15 or 18 or 25 and thought, oh, well, there's a mighty conspiracies going on around me all the time. People are conspiring. The only people I thought conspired against me were my mom and my dad. But, you know, and they just were being blessed by God because they were authorities that wanted to do their job right. And so they said, I thought, well, that's the only conspiracy I was aware of. I don't know that most people have any inherent predisposition to believe in conspiracies at all. But yet, this is a way to debunk this whole doctrine, and it's a way to debunk the idea of conspiracies in general. It's called, ridicule your opponent's position to the point where he has to give it up. And so they create these straw men, these sort of phony ideas that they say conspiracy theorists believe. And granted, I understand that there are people, just like there were, you know, out there in the fundies and the holy rollers particularly, you know, they see a demon behind every bush. Well, everything isn't demons, any more than everything is conspiracies. But the fact is, we've got some pretty solid biblical proof that, number one, conspiracies exist. And clearly we see it here in the life of Christ. Well, B, since humans had to be watching for potential dangers, again, according to evolutionary thinking, not according to doctrine, this led to a deeply rooted paranoia, which has resulted in what many call conspiracy theory. See, anyone that believes that there is some corrupt and evil organization that is behind the scenes, be it a social, a political, an economic, or a religious organization, a group of people of any kind, of any size, we're not even saying how big the organization has to be. If you believe that there are three people trying to run the world, then you believe in a conspiracy. So this basically says that there are these people, and they are manipulating people and events for its own benefit, and to the detriment of others, is considered to be a conspiracy theorist. Well, the fact is, they use this word conspiracy theorist now as a derogatory term, as a way of debunking and refuting anyone who advocates the fact that conspiracies do exist. And they exist at various levels. They don't just exist at the national or international level. They exist at local levels and all of that. So again, anybody that does that, well, so this is just a way, of course, of debunking any idea. So anytime somebody says conspiracy, they can say, oh, you're one of those. And then marginalize you because, quote, you believe in a conspiracy or conspiracies. Well, D, therefore, anyone, those that advocate a belief in a malevolent being opposed to God and man who heads an organized force of unseen fallen angels would fall into the category of a conspiracy theorist. If you believe that Satan is an active agent that is plotting against God, you're a conspiracy theorist. At that level, by this definition. And the fact is, there is really an evil guy named Satan who's plotting against God. And so for the people that don't believe that, well, they've actually bought into darkness. But that works fine for Satan because, again, how does a conspiracy work best? In the dark. It works best when it's undetected. And the less it gets detected, and this is why people who are involved in conspiracies are very secretive. They don't want you to know what they're doing. They may be plotting and scheming and manipulating behind your back, but they don't want you to know that. They think they're fooling you and that you're going to fall for all of this. Well, again, if you're not discerning at all, you may. Well, however, even those that believe that conspiracies are largely non-existent freely admit that conspiracies have existed and can continue to exist. And this comes from an atheism site. So if you think, well, he just pulled off some deal there from, you know, some fundy that said it or some believer. No. Even atheists admit that, you know, conspiracies can be real. They're not just completely dismissive of them. Well, F, in spite of the agreement that conspiracies do exist, they suggest that belief in conspiracies is simply a more satisfying way to live. What? How does this make my life better by believing in conspiracies? Well, I mean, I guess I assume in the extreme, if you believe that everything's a conspiracy, then it kind of lets you off the hook because you're not a part of it. I don't know how. I don't understand their thinking here. I don't pretend to understand their thinking. I'm just pointing out that this thinking exists. The alternative, as they see it, is to admit that the world is a random place of chance. So, when you look at history, as you observe human history, there are only really two views of all of history. There is the accidental and the planned. Now, why does anything happen? My contention is it happens because people exercise their volition. That's why actions happen. That's why God can judge people for their actions, because it's an exercise purely of their volition. He's not being in any way unfair. He's not being a respecter of persons. If they do things because they choose to, then that's their business and God's free to judge them for it, as the Almighty, as the Creator. So again, is the world just a place of random chance? Are there accidental occurrences? Well, I think there are. But when we talk about there's two views of history, I say there's largely two views, because do accidents occur? Sure. Are there fortuitous breaks? Sure. But largely, why do things come to pass? They're planned. I don't think these commercials for these politicians just appear magically on television. I think somebody planned them. I think somebody paid for them. I think somebody recorded them. I think somebody wrote the script. I think somebody, you know, and I'm a conspiracy theorist because I believe there's somebody behind these commercials. Now, where are they coming from? Who are they? Who are these people? Well, I don't know. They're people that are getting paid to do this stuff. And then I looked at some commercials and I think that couldn't have been planned. That's just idiotic. I liked, again, if you didn't see Saturday Night Live last night, they were doing some really funny stuff with this new type of black and white, you know, minimal commercial. It was supposed to be Brad Pitt talking, and it was just funny. I mean, just ridiculously funny. So, but again, how does Saturday Night Live come on? Is it planned or does it just accidentally happen? You know, I believe it's planned and planned out pretty well. Most of the time. Even if it's a live show, it's planned out pretty well. So, again, that doesn't mean that there aren't accidents, that there aren't things that occur. For instance, let's say somebody's planned to do something, whatever it is, and they get a flat tire. Well, they didn't plan that in their plan. It just happened. But now that doesn't necessarily stop their plan. Boom, jump out, change the tire, and go on. I mean, that's what you would do. So, largely in history, you have to ask yourself, why are things the way they are? And largely, it's because men have determined this. People have made decisions. At some point, why does America exist? Essentially, a group of men banded together and declared their freedom, their sovereignty from England. Now, That all resulted, of course, in the Revolutionary War and all kinds of other factors, and all these various things happened. But the fact is, it was sort of, now, did they see every exigency down the road? Did they see every possible thing that was going to... Did they realize the British were going to try to wage a war from across the sea? Again, you can't know everything. Even if you've got something planned out, you can't take into account every little detail. It's just almost impossible. And again, depending upon the largeness of the plan, the larger the plan, the more chance there are of these little details falling through the cracks. So, again, why are we where we are? Largely because people plan it out and they do it. That's my view of history in a nutshell. And again, that doesn't preclude accidents. Things can happen. You know, planes can crash, cars can wreck, tires can get flat, batteries can go dead. I mean, there's all kinds of details that could go wrong. But generally speaking, this is it. Well, F, in spite of the fact that conspiracies do exist, again, they suggest it's a more satisfying way to live because people don't want to think the world's just a random place of chance that just happens. Well, in a sense, it doesn't. And they go on to assert that if one believes in conspiracies, it provides that person with an enemy to work against as well as with friends to help. Thus, belief in conspiracies creates meaning and purpose in life. I thought that's what the Bible was supposed to do. I thought that was Jesus' job. See, I don't look to conspiracies to create meaning in my life. My life has meaning apart from any conspiracy. But am I smart enough to know that people have banded together, and in many cases, evil people band together to achieve an evil end, and they think they're in the right? I doubt very seriously that most people would acknowledge, I mean, they really think they're in the right when they're doing this stuff. And I don't think there's any question that at an international level, the desire to control the world, to run the world, is based on factors like greed and power lust and these types of things. But in the bottom line, if you read, it's for the good of the human race. We really just want to help the human race. It would be their what they would at least publicly say, that that's why we're doing this. Well, H, while some people have taken the reality of conspiracies to extremes, yes, I understand that. I understand there's extremists out there, but we're not going to deal with them. Thus bringing the valid concept into some disrepute, the Bible makes it plain that conspiracies are real, do occur, and have been successful. The vocabulary here in the Hebrew, a kashar, the verb 44 times, this verb denotes the act of tying or binding to something else. In a physical sense, it would be like tying a rope to a tree or whatever. It is used of joining with others to conspire against another. The participle is used to denote those involved in a conspiracy. 2 Samuel 15:31. But again, it's not unusual for in the Greek and Hebrew for participles to function as substantives and to refer to the people that are doing that verb, performing it. 2 Samuel 15:31. Now, someone told David, saying, Ahithophel is among the conspirators with Absalom. And David said, O Lord, I pray, make the advice of Ahithophel foolishness. So Ahithophel was a believer that had gotten out of sorts, gotten crossways with God's plan, is now working actively against David. And so David prays against him, that God will just jam him up and let him give Absalom some really stupid advice. Well, that's one of the things you can certainly do if there are people against you. Pray that God thwarts them. I don't see any problem with this prayer. People can say, well, this is kind of an imprecatory prayer. Well, but he's leaving it with God. As all the imprecatory prayers do, you leave it in God's hands. You acknowledge that God has control. Again, the participle there, and that's the conspirators with Absalom. Also, 2 Chronicles 33:25. Can see 34:25 doesn't make any sense. Let's hope 33:25 does. Yeah, verse 24 actually. Finally, his servants conspired against him, and put him to death in his own house. This is how you know when God's not for you. And the people of the land killed all the conspirators against King Amon. And the people of the land made Josiah, his son, king in the place. Kesher, that's a masculine noun, 16 times, six times it is used as the cognate accusative with the above verb. And in a good sense, which is not found in the New Testament, it means an alliance or treaty. Obviously, you can join with someone in a good sense, too, for a mutually beneficial deal or something that isn't designed to hurt somebody else. In a bad sense, it means an act of conspiracy or treason. Noun here, a feminine noun, makashava, in a neutral sense, the word means a thought, device, or plan. So it can just be used neutrally. I mean, it just means some idea you have, some plan. That, okay, it doesn't mean, it doesn't have to be evil. But in a negative sense, it means the thoughts of how to harm someone. The plots or schemes that are used. Jeremiah 11:19. And one of the things that's pretty clear here, Jeremiah was the object of a conspiracy. So communicators, again, should not be shocked that these types of things have happened regularly in history. And that they're going to happen, and may very well happen to you. But I was like a gentle lamb led to slaughter. I did not know that they had devised plots against me, saying, let us destroy the tree with its fruit, and let us cut him off from the land of the living, that his name be remembered no more. But the Lord knew about it. Zamam, the verb primarily used of God carrying out his plans against the wicked. When it is used of men, it is often used of evil plans and schemes which are directed towards others. Psalm 31:13. I have heard the slander of many. Terror is on every side. When they took counsel together against me, they schemed to take away my life. And this was during the time, this is one of those psalms that comes out of the incident with Bathsheba, when David was under discipline and David's enemies came out of the woodwork at that time. Because they could see David was weak, they could see God wasn't blessing him, and they thought to themselves, this is our time to strike. See, the conspirators always think they know the right time, too. They think they figure out when to strike. They're going to know when to execute their plan. Well, their plans are going to come to nothing is the problem. God very often thwarts this, and particularly if it's addressed against one of his positive believers. I mean, if it's against a believer like David, even if David's under discipline, that's between him and God. I wouldn't get crossways in that one if I were you. And David's enemies would have been well advised just to step back and leave it alone. But they wouldn't. People are stupid. They just want God to jam them. So they conspire against David. Conspire against Paul. Conspire against Jesus. Conspire against Jeremiah. We've seen it over and over and over again in history. These people get together in their little groups and they start their little conspiracy. Oh, on the surface, no, nothing's wrong. No, we're not here to conform a conspiracy. We just want to talk. And then finally, as the thing solidifies, you find out, oh, it's going to come to an evil end, isn't it? And maybe they did start off with a neutral idea. They didn't stick with it. That's for darn sure. Also, Psalm 10:2, that's the cognate noun, mazima. It's used there in Psalm 10:2. In pride, the wicked hotly pursue the afflicted. Let them be caught in the plots which they have devised. And so that's the prayer for the conspirators. Just let them do their thing, Lord, and let them get trapped in their own nets. And one of the things we're going to see is that was exactly what happened to Haman there in the time of Esther. That all that story in the book of Esther is about Haman conspiring against particularly Mordecai. But Jews in general, and guess what? He got hanged on the very gallows he prepared for Haman, for Mordecai. Now that's God's justice. So conspire all you want. I know you're going to come to a bad end. I mean, I know God's not going to bless it. And I've seen it played out in life time and time and time again in churches, fundy churches I was in, doctrinal churches. I've seen it time and again. And you know what? These people always come to nothing in the end. They will never amount to anything. Because number one, God's not for them for this kind of behavior. God's against this, as we're going to see. Well, five, nakal, actually, the verb four times. This verb focuses on the slick, deceptive, deceitful, and cunning actions involved in plotting against another. Genesis 37:18, one of the great conspiracies, was against Joseph by his brothers. You know you're going to have a bad day when your family decides to sell you into slavery. Well, actually, they were going to kill him first. And I believe it was either Judah or Reuben, one of them intervened there and saved him, essentially, from death. But Genesis 37:18, when they saw him from a distance, before he came close to them, they plotted against him to put him to death. And they said to one another, and it's Reuben that steps in and saves them. There in the couple verses that follow. So, ya'atz, a verb 80 times. In a good sense, the verb means to offer counsel, to offer advice, to deliberate, to purpose, or determine. In a bad sense, the verb is used of advising someone in a conspiracy. Psalm 83:3. Now, isn't it astonishing how much vocabulary there is for this thing that doesn't exist? These unreal conspiracies. There's a lot of vocabulary that the Bible talks about, though. 83:3. They make shrewd plans against your people. They conspire together against your treasured ones. They have said, come and let us wipe them out as a nation, that the name of Israel be remembered no more. For they have conspired together with one mind. Against you they make a covenant. That's the problem. What people don't recognize is that if the person you're dealing with is righteous, and you come against them in any way, that God is just going to nail you for that. And you better be careful. And especially be careful when you find out you're involved with other people that do not have maybe even your same agenda, that have a much different agenda, and you fall in with them. That's that happens. People get off balance, and that happens. So, again, careful who you associate with, but that's a part of the doctrine of separation, right? Well, masculine noun here, sowed, 21 times it's used. The primary meaning of the noun is a gathering for a confidential speech. It just means to speak privately or secretly to one another. It doesn't necessarily mean that there's something wrong in the speech or that there's an inherent evil in it. But it is sometimes translated as secret or secret counsel when an evil end is in view. 83:3 was there. They make shrewd plans is how they've translated it. And you can see 64 too. Rokes, a masculine noun, one time, although the meaning is uncertain, the term has been translated as plottings, conspiracies, intrigues, or schemes. Psalm 31:20, again, the idea between just a sort of neutral plan and a conspiracy is the level, first it gets to intent, for one thing. Intent has got to be there. These things don't happen accidentally. Oh, we accidentally got involved in a conspiracy against the pastor. You didn't accidentally get involved in it. That's for darn sure you didn't. You got involved in it out of your own volition. Or against Jesus here, we see, or Jeremiah, or any other communicator throughout history. So that's just the way life goes, Psalm 31:20. But hide them from the secret, in the secret place of your presence, from the conspiracies of man. Keep them secretly in a shelter from the strife of tongues. 9, ragash, one time, means to conspire or plot against someone. This one really forms the basis for the fundamental understanding that there is an international conspiracy in the last days. Why are the nations in an uproar and the peoples devising a vain thing? The kings of the earth take their stand, literally have taken their stand. And the rulers literally conspire together. This idea of taking counsel in this context, conspire is a fine translation here. They conspire together against the Lord and against His anointed one, saying, "Let us tear their fetters apart and cast their cords from us." You see in the last days the rejection of divine restraints. We have these divine institutions, volition, marriage, family, nationalism. And we see that in the last days, the one they want to throw off is nationalism. They want to make it a one-world world. No more nations, no more borders, just one global planet. And you'll hear that talk. Think globally. And we're all a member of the big human family. No, we're not. I'm not. I'm human, but I'm not a member of their family. I'm a member of God's family. And I'm a human being, but I'm not with them. I'm not with these unbelievers, and I'm not with these negative twits, and I'm not with these people that conspire against God and His plan. I'm just not ever going to be, I hope. Well, 10, David employs a number of terms that refer to those that conspired against him and the nature of their conspiratorial actions. Psalm 64, 1 through 6. And again, much of this came out of his disciplinary issues with Bathsheba. The fact that he committed adultery and then killed her husband. And he thinks, well, David's never, I can get away with this. I'm the king. No. David didn't get away with it. He was under discipline every day for the rest of his life for that. He never had a moment's peace in his household after that. His own son ends up getting killed. His right-hand man kills him, in fact. Even when David had said, don't kill him. Joab knew better. And he killed him. And so this David has this one sorrow, wave of sorrow at discipline after another throughout his entire life. So the idea, well, I can blow off these divine institutions and get away with them. Well, David didn't. And if David didn't, I don't think any of us are going to either. That's a fact. Well, one, A here, the secret counsel of evildoers, verse 2. Hear my voice, verse 1, O God, in my complaint. Preserve my life from the dread of the enemy. Hide me from the secret counsel of evildoers, from the tumult of those who do iniquity, who have sharpened their tongue like a sword. They have aimed bitter speech as their arrow. They shoot from concealment at the blameless. Suddenly they shoot at him and do not fear. They hold fast to themselves an evil purpose. They talk of laying snares secretly, and they say, who can see them? They devise injustices, saying, we are ready with a well-conceived plot. For the inward thought and the heart of a man are deep. Ah, but God will shoot at them. Suddenly they're going to get wounded. He's going to make them stumble. Their own tongue is going to work against them. Their own speech. At the end, this is all going to blow up in their faces. Well, B, the throng that works iniquity, that's rigshaw. That means a group of conspirators. See, their vicious verbal assaults are seen in verse 3. D, an evil purpose or an evil endeavor is seen in verse 5. Laying snares secretly. Verse 5, they devise injustices. They carefully research their plot against the object of their conspiracy. A well-conceived plot, the literal Hebrew in verse 6, is a searched-out search. It uses a cognate construction there. A thoroughly planned plot, we might say. The Greek vocabulary, soustrophe, a feminine noun, two times in the New Testament, but used in the Septuagint to translate the first four terms above. The first four Hebrew terms there are, in some cases in the Septuagint, this is the word they will use, the Greek term, to translate those Hebrew terms. Tumultuous gathering of people, a seditious or disorderly gathering, the product of a clandestine gathering, a plot or a conspiracy. Acts 19:40. And I believe the Acts 19 passage is when Paul is in Ephesus. And there's a big disturbance there, a riot essentially, because of the silversmiths. You know, this is one of the problems with sound doctrine. You can't sell idols anymore. People stop buying the idols when they realize they can talk to the real, live, living God. They don't need their plastic Jesus. You know, they don't need their shrine to Artemis. They don't need their little metal trinkets that they have and these little religious objects. Well, that was the problem. Paul had taught doctrine and people were throwing those away and destroying them. They didn't need their idols anymore. Well, this results in this big tumult. And in verse 40, for indeed here, because of all of this, we are in danger of being accused of a riot in connection with today's events, since there is no real cause for this. And in this connection, we will be unable to account for this disorderly gathering. That's our word there. And what are they doing? Well, they've pulled this whole thing together. Now, largely, it was this Demetrius character that ramrodded this. But he also got gathered together in verse 25, workmen of similar trades. And he got them all riled up and got them in on a conspiracy to kill Paul. Why? Because that'll put an end to doctrine, right? If you kill Paul. Well, it won't. But that's what he thought. Also here, Acts 23:12. This is an interesting little situation in which Paul's been taken captive by the Romans for in protective custody, essentially. So the Jews didn't kill him. But when it was day, the Jews formed a conspiracy and bound themselves under an oath, saying they would neither eat nor drink until they had killed Paul. I wonder how that went for them. They're dead now if they kept their word. If they kept that oath, I'll bet they didn't. Isn't that just like the negative? Make an oath to die and then just be afraid to die. Well, you're going to starve yourself to death, right? You're not going to eat or drink. Well, soon, omoisia, a feminine noun, one time, literally a taking of an oath together, a swearing together, a plot or a conspiracy. Same next verse 13. And there were more than 40 who formed this plot. In other words, who swore together to do this. Enedruo, a verb, two times, to conceal oneself in order to attack someone by surprise. To use an intrigue or plot against someone. Let's look at the Acts 23:21 here, since we're in that passage. So do not listen to them. This young man here, Paul, as it turns out. Now here's how God delivered Paul out of this. Verse 16, the son of Paul's sister overheard this. He's just this kid. We don't know how old he was. But he's just a kid, apparently. And he came and entered the barracks and told Paul. And Paul said, look, this young man has something to say. Take him to the commander. And so he basically tells him, don't listen to these guys. For there are more than 40 of them are lying in wait for him who have bound themselves with a curse not to eat or drink until they slay him. And now they are ready and waiting and for the promise from you. All they were waiting for was just the word that Paul was coming out. And they were going to figure out how to do it. And a few Romans might have died that day too. That's another reason why this guy's advice is so good for the centurion. He doesn't get ambushed. Now maybe the Romans would have been able to protect Paul. We don't know. But we certainly know that God did. God did. And you can also see Luke 11:54. Epibule, feminine noun. Four times, a secret plan to do evil to someone. A plot to cause them harm. Sumbuleo, the verb, four times. In a positive sense, this verb means to carefully consider something. To meditate upon and advise a course of action. In a negative sense, it means to be involved in a conspiratorial plot against someone. So definition and description here. A, the legal definition of a conspiracy is a combination or confederacy between two or more persons formed for the purpose of committing by their joint efforts some unlawful or criminal act, or some act which is lawful in itself but becomes unlawful when done by the concerted action of the conspirators. This is just simply the legal definition of what conspiracy is, how the courts would view this, how a judge would view it. Well, you got to believe that the judge is not going to look lightly upon people that do this kind of stuff if they get caught, that this is illegal. Well, be a conspiracy may be of an ongoing nature. Some participants may drop out and others join in. It depends on the nature of the conspiracy, the time. Like, for instance, that conspiracy against Paul, it was only going to last until they killed Paul. I mean, if they had succeeded. Then the conspiracy would have been over. But now you got an ongoing conspiracy. We know, for instance, that there's been a multiple-year conspiracy to try to kill Jesus from Jerusalem. And that went on. I think more people, maybe as they became aware of it, joined in with it. Some maybe dropped out. If Nicodemus, say, was a part of it at the beginning, well, he may have dropped out. We don't know. And again, it kind of depends on the length of the conspiracy, the time frame involved, and how far-reaching, how big the conspiracy is, and what its aims are, and how long it actually needs to be there before it can succeed. Well, see, the details of the operation may change from time to time. And those involved do not need to know each other or the part played by others. And so there's no need in a conspiracy for everybody to even know each other. A real conspiracy can be organized by somebody and he can be using people in very different locales. And given one of the things, I saw it in some movie where they were doing some particular thing, and he was having one guy work on one part of the computer program, one guy here working on another part of the computer program, another guy here doing this, another guy over here doing this, and none of them knew what the others were doing, but there was one guy who was pulling all this together. And so they could be out here working individually, doing their individual little things, and never know that they're involved in a far bigger organization or process. And so, again, it doesn't mean that these people are all always friends, even. You might think, well, people would conspire together because they're friendly with one another. Well, sometimes, sometimes not. The fact is, most conspiracies, when you get into them, the conspirators themselves, and particularly the dupes in the conspiracy, as we're going to get to, they don't know very much. They don't need to know very much. It's not critical for them to understand the plan, even. But there's somebody calling the shots. There's somebody calling the meetings. There's somebody making the plan behind the scenes. D, a member does not need to know all the details of the plan or the operations. However, he must know the purpose of the conspiracy and agree to become a party to the plan in order to be an actual part of the conspiracy. And E, further, there is agreement, a partnership in which each member becomes the agent or partner of every other member. That's from Black's Law Dictionary. I didn't make that up. And so once one gets involved in these things, guess what? You're just as bad as the worst person there if you get involved in this stuff. However bad the thing is, you've identified yourself with it. And that is not something you want to be doing. Because some of these people can be incredibly evil. But the fact is, you become then liable for the actions. It's like, we have these ideas about accessories to crimes. And if you're driving the getaway car and somebody gets killed, guess what? You're getting charged with murder. You say, I didn't pull the trigger. Doesn't matter. Doesn't make any difference. You were an accessory. And in that case, before the fact. And then there are accessories after the fact. We understand. But the whole point is, here's what people don't get when they get involved with these evil people. Number one, they're dragged down eventually to their level. You become just like them, unfortunately. That's the deal. And legally, you're just as guilty as the most guilty of them if you get involved in these types of things. So these kinds of things, obviously, conspiracies can happen on the job. People can conspire against other employees and this sort of thing. Well, that should never be tolerated. A good leadership wouldn't tolerate. Well, if it is not necessary to prove the criminal plan actually was accomplished, or that the conspirator was involved in all stages of the planning or knew all the details involved. See, from a legal standpoint, all I would have to show as a prosecutor is that you were involved, that you met with these people, that you spoke with them. And you can claim ignorance all you want, but it won't matter. Because if they're convicted and they're guilty, you're going to be guilty with them. I saw a deal that they another documentary on that prison there in Iraq, Abu Ghraib. And the fact is, there were a lot of people who knew what was going on. And there were people who didn't know what was going on. And there's this one particular black soldier, I remember them interviewing him. And he only showed up in one of these photographs. And he never abused any prisoners, he never violated any rules. But he was in that photograph and he did prison time. Why? Because they said everybody knew. If you knew and you didn't blow the whistle, well, that's too bad on you. Then you're an idiot. And I felt bad for the kid because, I mean, and basically what they did was the real leadership up here, if you want to call it that, who knew what was going on and who were allowing all of this and, in fact, encouraging it, they never did any time. It was the common, that picture, the infamous picture of the girl standing there pointing with her little finger or whatever she was doing. She was involved in this. She did time. And her CO, who was engineering and orchestrating a lot of this, he did time. But when you go back and you look at it, you realize, well, these, you know, the soldiers themselves, I don't blame them, frankly. I mean, obviously, to the extent that they did things that were immoral or clearly morally wrong, they should have known better. But you find out that these soldiers were under mortar attacks every day. They were constantly being shelled there. And the Iraqis they were training were sneaking in weapons to the prisoners. In fact, in one point, as one of the base leaders was walking by a cell, this Iraqi prisoner pulls out a 9mm and opens fire on him. And, well, guess what? Then it was shooting ducks in a barrel because they wasted him in that cell. And you just see all you see at the end of it is you just see this bloody mess and you could see this body had been dragged out. And so I sympathize with the soldiers that got involved in that. But number one, in certain cases, they should have known better. And number two, even if they didn't do anything wrong, some of them still did prison time. Why? Because they were a part of it. They were there. And in a conspiracy, guess what? If you're a part of it, you're just as guilty as the guiltiest person. Whatever they may do, however it goes. Well, gee, since people may be involved in advancing an agenda that is subversive and or dangerous, it is important for all believers to exercise discernment when approached by someone advocating or advancing a questionable agenda. If your little radar starts to go off, or you say, you know, there's something that isn't right about this, or your stomach starts getting queasy, or whatever signals your body sends you when something isn't right, you better run the other way. Because to go any further may get you in all kinds of trouble. So H, since each individual participant fundamentally becomes a partner or agent with those devising plans against any other person, government, or institution, each person involved in the conspiracy, no matter how little they know about it, it shares in the guilt of those plotting it. And that's from a legal standpoint, and so therefore that's also from God. God doesn't view these people as innocent. This is one of the things we've taught for years and years. Avoid these mob actions. Oh, well, we're going to go occupy Wall Street. Oh, good, go occupy it, but do it on Wall Street. Why are you doing it in Tampa? Wall Street is not in Tampa. And so these people, and while some things may seem good on the surface, or they may seem like, I could support that, avoid mob actions. Avoid getting caught up in crowds doing stuff. Because you never know what the agenda of the crowd is, and you never know when it could take a turn for the worse. And back in the 70s, of course, you have that deal where they killed those students at Kent State. But, you know, it was a mob action that day. And I'm not for shooting unarmed, innocent civilians. If you think I'm advancing that, I'm not. But I'm telling you, if you're in the wrong place at the wrong time and you end up dead, that's your fault. And one of the things you avoid are these people and groups that are off doing whatever people and groups want to do. And in many cases, it never ends well. It's like, you know, how many good stories do you hear that start with, it was 3 o'clock in the morning at a bar? Or is that how most of the murder stories start? It was 3 o'clock in the morning at a bar, and all was well. Yeah, no, probably not. So, again, you get caught up in these things, you're going to be guilty. Avoid them. Know what you're getting into. Keep your eyes open. So, in that regard, there is a distinction between an actual conspirator who is acting with premeditation and one that may inadvertently get caught up in a conspiracy. Well, I understand that there is degrees of guilt. Even Jesus talked about this in the murder plot to kill him. What did he tell Pilate? They have the greater guilt. He didn't tell Pilate, you're guiltless. He didn't say, oh, don't worry, Pilate, it's fine, you can murder me. No. He said, those that deliver me to you have the greater guilt. But greater guilt means that you got guilt. And so he indicted Pilate that day, as he should have. So while there are degrees in all of this and degrees of guilt, the fact is any person involved isn't guiltless. Even how little he may know about what's going on. Well, J. many refer to the uninformed participants as dupes. That's a good name for them. They're dupes. They've been duped. They're being used. They don't know they're being used. They're being manipulated by somebody that has a hidden agenda. They don't tell the dupes, hey, I've got a hidden agenda. You want to join me? They talk to the dupes like, hey, you're nice. I think this is something you might be interested in. Want to sell Amway? No. That would be a minor conspiracy that's not dangerous. But the dupes are the people who don't really know, and they're kept largely in the dark. The conspirators don't want you to know what's going on. They don't want you to have the full picture. Number one, it would indict them. And number two, you could talk. The danger of dupes is that they talk too much. And you've seen, I don't know how many movies I've seen where, Donnie Brasco, that was a good one. The danger was you know stuff and you just talk too much. And if you talk too much, with those guys, you ended up dead. So the conspirators, if you think they're planning, let's say they're planning a major conspiracy, say an assassination or something, do you think they would be afraid to kill somebody who possibly spoiled their plans? I don't think they would. Why would they? They're already in their minds ready to commit murder. So why wouldn't they kill somebody that got in their way? And you see that goes on all the time. Well, a civil conspiracy is defined as two or more people acting in concert to defraud or cause other injury to another person or property, which results in damage to the person or property of the object of conspiracy. So L, when conspiracy is directed toward the government, it is referred to as sedition. Sedition involves the advocacy of uprising against the government, overthrow of the government, or support for an enemy of the government during time of war. See, this is why we now are constantly at war. Read 1984. If you haven't read it, go get a copy and read it. I got a copy, I'll loan you. We're constantly at war. Why is this constant talk at war? Because if you're at war, you can justify anything. You can justify any treatment. You can justify refusal to give due process. I just saw the other day on the news, they said, those involved in the 9/11 thing were in court today for... And I thought, what? In court? Are you kidding me? What happened to due process? What happened to a speedy trial? What happened to all this? So we've detained these people for 11 years. If they're guilty, they need to pay for their crimes, but they don't need to pay for them 11 years down the road. They should have paid for them right then. And don't even get me started on the fact that all these people are Arabians and none of them were Iraqi or Afghanistan. Or that there's ever any indication that bin Laden or anybody else was even associated with some of these people. Oh, but let's not let the facts get in the way. Let's just paint our conspiracy story and whitewash the truth and move on. I don't see us, throwing Saudi Arabia to the dogs. We haven't invaded them. Well, that's where all these guys came from. Oh, well, we've got these different standards for that. Well, again, why now the government, we're always at war, so therefore now anything is justified. We're at war. We're at a war on terror. We're not at war. Don't buy into the brainwashing. Consciously think every time you hear that. No, we're not. There's a war on terror. No, there isn't. You know what scares me? A war on terror. I'm so terrified of the war on terror that it's not working. Because anybody that thinks about it just says, well, all you got to do is be branded as a terrorist and then boom, they got you. Well, this guy was a terrorist. Who would ever know? Well, two, this may involve speeches, publications, and organization of others so inclined against the government. Sedition usually involves conspiring to disrupt the legal operation of the government. In that regard, it goes simply beyond expressing an opinion or protesting government policy. Last time I checked in America, the First Amendment was still valid. We have a right to free speech. But now, do you have a right to free speech saying you're going to kill the president? No, that's a felony, apparently. You can't do that. And to kill an ex-governor of Massachusetts is a class 3 misdemeanor. So you can't do that. That was part of the jokes for those of you who watch Saturday Night Live. You got it. So the point of all of this is that certain speech is not going to be protected if it's speech that's anti-government rhetoric. And if it threats, this is another whole thing, there has to be some implied threats in here. Well, we tell believers, number one, stay away from this. Romans 13 is still the verse of the day. All authority comes from God, and we're to obey the government. Whether we agree with it, whether we like it, whether they're right or wrong, we have to be obedient citizens until, again, maybe some moral issue is presented where we can legitimately disobey. But even then, as we pointed out, if you legitimately disobey, like those three Jews, you can still get cast into the fiery furnace. The government still holds the sword. They hold the final word, if they choose to. But again, we've never advocated any of this type of thing about conspiring against the government. That's nonsense. Believers should not get caught up in that. So sedition is distinguished from treason, which requires actual betrayal of the government, or espionage, which is spying or transferring secrets to a known enemy. And in M, conspiracies are also conducted by those in positions of religious or political power and authority. These are generally known as cabals. So if you see that term, you'll understand that it's generally a conspiracy of some major authority. All right, well, our time's up. We're going to stop there, and you're going to have an extended break until I get back and am prepared to teach. Thank you, Heavenly Father, for the opportunity to fellowship in the things of your plan. We pray that you would sanctify this information to our souls. In Christ's name, amen.